In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
In the year 80, that's 80, Emperor Titus completed work on the Flavian Amphitheater, better known as the Colosseum, which played host to spectacular extravaganzas, including flooding the arena to reenact naval battles, and some far less savory events, including bloody gladiator combat and the murder of Christians. Nowadays, we have politics for that sort of thing. As we've said plenty of times before, elections have consequences. 94 million Americans out of work after 7 years of Obama. We never have enough funding for schools, but millions of acres of timber just sitting there that could generate jobs, instead of the millions of acres of wildfires. Elections have consequences. Take, for example, last week's show. In Canada, they elected people who did transfer federally held public lands to the states, and, exactly as we've said on iSpy, there was an economic boom. Love him or hate him, Trump is largely responsible for infusing enthusiasm into the Republican field. Both Fox and CNN have set record viewerships with their debates, over 20 million viewers each. By December 2011, the highest-rated Republican debate of the year drew one-third the viewers, 7.5 million. On today's show, we're not just discussing who won a debate, but more importantly, can a Republican win the election in 2012? And we'll analyze whether the elements are in place that a conservative could win this election. To talk about the debate and for some analysis on the Republican field in general, as well as their prospects, both nationally and in Oregon, I'd like to welcome longtime Republican activist and all-around great guy, Greg Leo. He is the former executive director, chief of staff, and communications director of the Oregon Republican Party. Greg, it's always great to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Delighted to be on to talk about the presidential election.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I came away with, both from the last debate and this one, which I think is really very encouraging, is that there is a lot of people watching this. You had like 26 million, I think, watch the Fox debate, and something like around 22, 25 million, they're not exactly sure just yet, watch the CNN debate. I can't remember when we've seen that much activity on the Republican side this early.
It's unbelievably interesting to people. The 26 million or so that watch the CNN debate is a very large number, and I just think it shows how much interest, you know, there is and who will be the next leader of the free world.
Well, and do you find that surprising at all? Because it seems like, you know, of course, we know that the media loves the Democrats. I mean, there's just no disputing that anymore. And they are always pushing them. They are doing everything they can to build them up and beef them up. Do you find it surprising that the media seems to be very interested in the Republicans this time around?
Well, no, I don't really. What, you know, we've had here is, you know, of course, two terms of Barack Obama. And, you know, because of the 22nd Amendment of the Constitution, there's no third term for Barack Obama. So
thank goodness for that.
These things happen in cycles, you know, and the Democrats have had a cycle. Government has expanded. Taxes have been raised. Foreign policy has been changed in certain ways. And I think people now see the need for change. And so that's why I think there's so much interest in the Republican primary. Plus, we have an amazing cast of characters here who are running for president.
We do. It's a very interesting cast of characters. Everybody from the bombastic Donald Trump to somebody on the other scale, Lindsey Graham and Jeb Bush as well. But it's interesting what you say there about this need for change. And I agree that that's a big part of it. But I also wonder, too, in terms of the media really focusing more on the Republicans this time around, I wonder how much of that is essentially giving Hillary some cover by not covering her, by not focusing on all of her troubles and stuff and really diverting the attention to the Republicans. They're essentially hoping things will blow over with Hillary. What are your thoughts?
I think Hillary's got big problems, and she's seeing her base erode as more questions come up about the emails and Benghazi. I think she's having a hard time getting traction in her own party, which makes this really more of a wide open election, I think, for both of the national parties.
Well, we want to get your thoughts on Hillary in more depth a little bit later in the show, but let's go back to the...
Mark, I want to hijack you just for a moment. As we tape this today, it's September 17th, and this is a very important day. Today is Constitution Day, and I just wanted to make the point that 228 years ago today, the Constitution got ratified on September 17th, 1789. That is an exciting thing that we have been able to keep, you know, this republic going, no principles for this long.
Yeah, that is exciting. And unfortunately, we got a little bit of break up there with you just then. But anyway, returning to the debate, though, some of the things that I thought was really interesting, and actually Rush hit on some of these, the excitement here is that we really do have a great field of candidates, and all of them are talking about conservative values. I mean, every single one of them. We don't have a single candidate claiming that they're a moderate. They all want to be seen as a conservative, and I think that's very encouraging.
Yes. Well, it is, and I think it's because the candidates understand the base, and the base of the Republican Party is conservative. It's about small government, individual freedom, support of free enterprise, and it's good to see that people understand who the party is and, of course, is working to get the support of people in the party.
Well, and of course, there are different levels of conservatives that are in here. Jeb Bush, I think, is one of the ones that I think a lot of people would say he's really not a conservative thoroughbred. But it is true that every single one of them on the Republican side is far more conservative than even the most conservative, if you can call him that, Democrat.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, we see some very high-quality candidates here. And, you know, it's a rich field that represents a great ideological diversity, and that's good. I think that's good in the process that people are able to take the time and see the various kinds of Republicans who are running here. I do want to just kind of get serious for a moment about the process. You know, we are very early in the presidential cycle. The Republican convention is going to be in Cleveland July 18th to the 21st, so we're 306 days out. That's 10 months.
Yeah,
and 10 months in presidential politics is a very long time. And so I'm sure we are going to see lots of twists and turns and the road as we get closer. Now, the Oregon primary, where Oregonians get to, you know, fill out their mail-in ballots to select their presidential preference, is on May 17th. So we're 243 days out today from the Oregon primary, and 418 days out from the general election. So I think we are at the beginning of a very long and twisty road.
We are at a very long and twisty road, and I actually want to ask you a question on the process part of things, but we will have to do that after the break. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Talk today about the Republicans and their debate that they just had this last week, and going to be looking at some of their chances for success as they move forward. And we're actually going to be looking at the Republican field, not just nationally, but also here in Oregon. And then we'll be analyzing the Democrats as well. To do all that, we are talking with all-around great guy, Greg Leo. He is a longtime Republican activist and also the former executive director and chief of staff of and communications director of the Oregon Republican Party. Boy, that's a mouthful. I mean, you've really been around the Republicans for a long time.
Well, it's been 43 years, and it's been a great experience and a great way to give back to our country, I think.
It has been, I imagine, for you. And I know that you really first got your feet wet in politics with the Reagan administration.
Yes, I was delighted to serve as Ronald Reagan's press secretary here in Oregon during 1980. And then I worked for the Reagan administration in Washington, D.C., in the Immigration and Naturalization Service as a political appointee. And as part of that, we wrote the citizenship manual that you know, new immigrants will study as part of the naturalization process. So In the course of things, I had a chance to really review the American processes, which are all, of course, constitutional in origin. So that's why we honor the Constitution and our 228 years of, you know, tradition for that great Constitution that we all love so much.
Yeah, and that's really cool that you were able to play a role in all of that. You know, going into the break, we were talking about process, and I think that's an important point. And before we get to that point, though, one of the things I would like to say, because you mentioned that Oregon's primary is coming up, and if people want to vote, help elect their candidate of choice on the Republican side, they have to be a registered Republican. You cannot be an unaffiliated voter. You cannot be a conservative voter, because they actually, it's not conservative, it's Constitution Party, I should say, right, or Libertarian or any of the other ones. If you want to vote for a Republican candidate in the primary, you have to be a Republican.
That's absolutely right. And really, you think about it, the major political parties are private organizations, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and, you know, the Independent Party now. The three parties that will be on the May 17th, 2016 primary ballot. And, you know, it's interesting to note with the presidential election that it really is still about the Electoral College. You know, there's 435 members of the House and 100 senators. So we have in total, plus the three delegates for the District of Columbia, 538, and 538 members of the Electoral College. So each state votes, and that commits their members of the Electoral College to vote for president. So I am, in fact, one of the Republican electors now. There's seven of us who ran statewide and were elected by the precinct committee people. And if we are successful in Oregon and can win Oregon for the Republican candidate, then the first week in January of 2017, we'll go to Salem and cast seven ballots, which will be Oregon's Electoral College votes that will aggregate up to the 538 votes in the Electoral College. So the big number for the public to remember is 270. 270 votes will win the presidency of the United States.
You know, and that's a great point that people need to remember, because it's not the popular vote, it's the electoral vote that gets the president elected. And unfortunately, the Democrats really have a strong lead in that. I think what they are considering as a lock is somewhere between 200 and 220 electoral votes. So why don't you comment on that? Because that is a steep hill to climb for Republicans to overcome. Because of the fact that New York and California and Illinois and some of these other states have been Democrats for so long, it's almost a guarantee that those electoral votes will go for the Democrats. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, there are these electoral vote-rich states that always become the battleground states in the presidential elections. And, of course, Ohio is probably Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania are the ones that probably get the most attention. Mm-hmm. That's where you see the candidates. They spend the most time there, spend the most money, and they're the ones that really are determinative. Now, you know, winning Ohio is super important, so it's no mistake that the Republicans are having their convention in Cleveland in July in order to help nail down those votes. And so as the party looks at the various candidates, we'll be looking at ways to balance the ticket in a way that competes well in the electoral vote-rich states. And that would be, again, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York. We don't have much of a shot at California, but boy, there are a lot of electoral votes out there. So yeah, that's what we're trying to do to get to 270.
You mentioned that the strategy there of having the Republicans have their convention in Ohio in order to try to help maybe nudge Ohio to the red column. Where are the Democrats holding theirs? I suppose it's not Texas.
No, I believe it's in Philadelphia. You know, I haven't paid that close attention to it, but I think it's in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania. And the idea is to, you know, attract the big states, in this case, Pennsylvania.
Oh,
so
and
I'm
our,
pretty sure it's in,
our,
yep,
our founding fathers would be just rolling in their graves there in Philadelphia.
Well, I think we can all be proud that we have a constitution that's working well. But, you know, as you see the presidential campaign kind of roll out, it's a question of how well these candidates will compete to get the Electoral College votes that they need. And so that's why we'll see front-runner candidates pick vice presidential candidates who will help them balance the ticket. There's balancing that goes on in terms of political geography, gender, you know, ideology. So there's lots of different factors that go into how the presidential candidate will pick the vice presidential running mate.
Yes, and that's an important point because a lot of people forget that. I mean, it's a matter of you've got to it's great that a candidate has really strong conservative values and you really believe in everything that they say, but if they can't win the election, then that's where things get – it gets very discouraging, I think, for some people. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Because I'm not sure that a really dyed-in-the-wool conservative could actually – well, you know, actually, we're coming up on a break. We will ask Greg that when we come back. Everyone stay with us. More with Greg Leo talking about the Republican chances straight ahead. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson. We are keeping an eye on big government, and although this week we're keeping an eye on the Republicans, and then later on we'll be talking a little bit more about the Democrat chances here, and of course we're talking about the presidential election. And to do that, we are talking with Greg Leo, a former executive director, chief of staff and communications director of the Oregon Republican Party. Been around Republican politics for quite some time, dating back to the Reagan administration. And Greg, we were talking about the whole process, really, that you've got to win these electoral candidates, the electors. And so that's going to take some strategy as you move from one state to the next, because the Republicans in Oregon are very different than the Republicans in Texas. And also the same thing can be said of the Republicans in Ohio. So it is a matter of positioning.
So we have certain Republican states states that are likely to be Republican regardless of the nominee. And, you know, I know that's kind of a broad statement, but I think that it's also true there are blue states, Democratic states, that are likely to vote regardless of their nominee either. So you find places like, in our case, like Texas, the southern states that are really very strong Republican. And then you have, you know, places in the Northeast, California, you know, Massachusetts, places like that, which are Democratic states. And so the battleground states tend to be electoral vote rich, and they tend to be swing states. Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio, we've talked about, but also in the upper Midwest, I think we have excellent shot at Michigan, possibly Illinois, certainly Iowa, and maybe Minnesota. So that's kind of the strategy here, is to see how competitive the Republican presidential candidates can be in those key swing states. And that's what I think the professionals are looking at on the road to 270.
And that's really where there's a difference of opinions between the so-called professional politicians, in terms of people that do this for a living, that are the strategists, versus the run-of-the-mill Republican voter. And I know that gets frustrating sometimes, but I have always looked at the candidates two different ways. How much do I agree with them on the issues? And then also, do I think that particular candidate can win the general election? Because as much as I agree with a candidate, if he has no chance of winning the election, then that's going to affect my vote for him.
Yeah, and that's really where I think the William F. Buckley rule comes in. You know, William F. Buckley, a great conservative, journalist, he said that Republicans should choose the most electable conservative. So it's the conservative that has the best chance of being elected. And so we have to kind of blend the practical of is a person electable with the ideological. Is he or she consistent with our conservative values? That's kind of the test that all these candidates are going to be judged by.
Yes, and I think that kind of begs the question, can a true, dyed-in-the-wool, honest-to-goodness conservative win the Republican nomination and the general election? Because the moderates have not proven that they can do that. So is this, in your opinion, do you think this is the election that we could actually get a true conservative into office?
I do, because I think, first of all, the state of the Democratic Party gives us a great advantage right now. There's a big schism with Democrats nationally between, you know, very liberal Bernie Sanders supporting Democrats, and then, you know, more liberal Hillary Clinton supporting Democrats.
It's a very blurred line in there, I have to say. It's very blurred.
I don't see a winner at this point. I see Hillary, the presumptive nominee, has had a lot of problems and difficulty in the polls lately. We've seen Bernie Sanders raising in the polls, and, you know, we see the possibility of Joe Biden getting in as kind of a third-party vote splitter. So that is up in the air. But the main thing is this is a change election presidentially. This is, you know, we've had two terms of Barack Obama. A lot of people are not happy with the direction the country is going. The stock market and the economy is a little rocky. And, you know, it is because it's been burdened by a lot of taxing policies, which don't let the great American economic engine run smoothly. So we get to a point here where I think Americans are looking for a new way to go, and that gives the Republicans an opportunity. Now, the question is, can we nominate a person that can attract, not just, you know, keep our base, but can also reach out to people who would not normally vote for the Republican candidate in order to build that winning coalition?
Well, a couple of things there. You said that we're coming off of 8 years of Obama, and I think that is a very key point. And I think that's one of the reasons why a conservative can, in fact, win this election. It's interesting that, you know, 8 years of, you know, the Democrats like to say 8 years of Bush brought them Obama. Well, it might be 8 years of Obama will bring us a true conservative. However, within that, I think one of the things that is going to be a real deciding factor here is the fact that after 8 years of Obama, you've got 94 million people either out of work or underemployed, and every single one of them can vote.
Yes. And because of voter registration efforts, we will see more people having access to the ballot. And that brings in people who haven't voted before and, frankly, are a bit impressionable and frankly, will be listening. And that's why when you see 26 million people looking at the Republican debate, that's got to be seen as a good sign that Americans are looking for that right candidate. So we have a stellar group of candidates. I am not even sure the correct number. I think it's 22. But with Rick Perry dropping out of the race, we have a number of people who have run big states. And, well, we have people who have been extremely good in business. And we have people who have distinguished themselves in the Congress. So a great slate of candidates and one which will reach out to every compass point in the Republican Party and bring them in to the primary process.
Yes, very much. We are coming up on a break here. And, you know, the Democrats here in Oregon made sure that when you're registering for your driver's license that you could get registered to vote as well. Maybe Republicans should have made sure that when you apply for unemployment, you can register to vote. All right, everyone, stay with us. More with Greg Leo. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We are analyzing the Republican chances in the upcoming presidential election, and we'll be talking about not just their chances in the national election, but also their chances here in the in the local Oregon Republican Party and whether or not they can take back some offices there. And then later on, we'll be talking about the Democrats as well. To do all of that, we're talking with all-around great guy and our go-to guy for all things Republican, Greg Leo. We've been talking a lot on this show about the chances of conservatives, and I'm thinking that it's looking very good. However, though, we talked about that, too, in the terms of there is some positioning here. I mean, the conservative that you want that agrees with you 100% may not exactly be the best candidate in terms of his electability on a national level. So with that in mind, do you think that Republicans, the run-of-the-mill Republican voters, having gone through 8 years of Obama, would they be willing to trade a little conservatism for effectiveness? And by that, what I mean is, would they be willing to take someone who is maybe not quite as conservative as they would normally like in exchange for someone who can get things done? I mean, if you've got this grocery list of conservative issues that are important to you, would they be willing to get 50-60% or so of those things done versus what we have now, which is getting nothing done?
The answer is yes. I think we can. I think Republicans know it's a very important election, that the future of our republic really hangs in the balance, and that this is the time to apply President Reagan's 80-20 standard. And that is, if I can agree with you 80% of the time, then I will support you and help you. And, you know, there is a 20% difference in all of us. I mean, yes. In our lives, with our spouses and our families, I mean, do we agree all the time with everybody? No. There needs to be some understanding that you will not agree 100% with a candidate. So there'll be a 20% you don't agree with, and you just have to say the greater good is served by finding that 80% of the time when you do agree. Now, if you don't agree 80% of the time, well, then keep looking, and you'll probably find a candidate, but will they be electable? One doesn't know. We're trying to find the people who can adhere to Republican principles, govern in a way which is consistent with our constitutional values, and attract voters, you know, other voters who would not necessarily support Republicans or conservatives. And so that's a trick, but it's important if we are going to be able to govern the United States.
And that's a great point. It's the governing and getting things done that is really important. We talked about how 8 years of Obama may usher in a really great conservative. I think weighing into that in this election cycle, we have leaders like McConnell and Boehner. We'll have had 6 years of Boehner and 2 years of McConnell. And I got to tell you, I'm hearing from a lot of people who are very frustrated with Republicans right now, in the sense that we gave you the House, we gave you the Senate, and then you're not standing up and stopping anything.
Well, people do have that point of view, and I can understand it. And it's especially frustrating here in Oregon, where of our 5 members of the House and 2 U.S. senators, we only have 1 Republican. So our ability to, you know, transfer our franchise to the Congress through our elected officials is very, it's a very weak connection. I mean, Greg Walden's a great guy, but there's only one of them, and it would be better to elect some Republican congressmen and senators from Oregon, so that conservatives and Republicans felt that the Congress was more consistent with their values.
And that's great points. And unfortunately, one of the reasons that I see time and again is that, and it frustrates me a lot with watching the Republicans, is that over time it seems like they get hooked into trying to vilify and knock down the other candidates. And I really get frustrated by that for a number of reasons. First of all, we saw the effect of that here in Oregon. We had Oregon Right to Life, which is normally a really great organization, went out of their way to destroy Monica Wiebe on a personal level. And so, of course, when the general comes back around, there's nothing they can do. They can't walk those statements back and say, oh, by the way, we didn't mean it. She's really nice and she would be good for us. And right. So we see this Republican infighting happen all the time. And, of course, you know, the Wiebe, I mean, she kind of hung herself on her own. She didn't need Oregon Right to Life to help her with that. But anyway, it's that infighting. Go ahead.
Yeah, now is the time to have that infight in the primary. Because now, I mean, this is when we can pick a candidate who is running for the nomination who can best fit our ideologies. And
right, but
I just counted them. We have 19 currently in the race. We had one, governor of Texas drop out. Rick Perry dropped out. But, gosh, there's such a variety of candidates here. If you can't find a Republican in this group that you can agree 80% of the time with, then, you know, then that's a real question, you know. But I think we've got some great folks. And then, you know, once we campaign in poetry, we govern in prose.
Yeah.
And by that I mean governing is so much harder politically than actually attaining the office. So as we pick people, we need to think about how well will they actually govern, and can they pull together a consensus of Americans in order to lead the country forward?
Well, you said that now's the time for the infighting, but I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on that, because I hate to see it, and here's why. Is because what happens is, by the time the general, by the time the general election comes around, you'll have pockets of Republicans who have been convinced by their candidate that the eventual candidate is the devil incarnate. And so they end up staying home because they see that their particular candidate was slighted. They feel personally slighted. And that candidate, they have an entire list of things as to why they shouldn't vote for them. I would much rather see these candidates say, I may not disagree. I may disagree with that person, but here's why I would be the better person. And I don't see that so much from our Republicans.
I agree. And I see your point. The difference is that once we fight it out in the primary, we all need to get behind our nominee. And so, you know, what my comment is predicated on the fact that there is a time for great diversity now, but once we have the nominee, everybody needs to get behind them. And that's the point. The way we actually win the White House in 2016 is to bring together everybody in the party and reach outside of the party to people who agree with our principles in order to build a working majority.
Well, I just wish that they would promote their own candidate without trying to destroy the other ones. And you can point out maybe a voting record or something, or where you disagreed on a vote. but you don't need to do it in such a way that you characterize that person in such an awful way. I think that's self-destructive. All right, I'm getting the cut sign here from my producer, so we're going to have to take a little break here. Coming up, we will be talking about the Democrats and also some of the Republican chances here in Oregon. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson. Talk today to Greg Leo, longtime Republican operative. I should say activist, not operative. Really long-term worker in with both the Oregon Republican Party and also on a national level. Cut his teeth in the Reagan administration. And Greg, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Democrats, but before we go there, who would you say your bottom three are right now in the Republican race that you see as likely to drop out here maybe within the next month or so?
Right. I would see for sure Jim Gilmore, the former governor of Virginia, as being a non-starter. I think Chris Christie has really not caught fire here and is likely to go the way of, you know, Governor Perry. And, probably the third one is George Pataki, the former governor of New York, who just doesn't seem to be getting much time or attention.
No, he really doesn't. And, you know, I was living in New York when he won that election, and that was a shock at the time that you had a Republican come in and win that. I mean, he was down, I want to say, 15, 20 points about 3 weeks before the election and came back and won by five. And he did do some good things for the state, but you're right. I just don't see him continuing. He would certainly be in my bottom three.
I think Jindal might be nudging out somebody on the bottom three. I don't think he has done very well so far, and so he might be our fourth in our list of three there.
Yeah, you mentioned Jim Gilmore. I'd totally forgotten that he's even in the race, so I would certainly say that he's in my bottom three. Rand Paul has been a surprise. I thought that he would go a little bit further. And he in this particular election cycle, I just don't see him gaining traction.
I don't think you can count out Rand Paul. And here's why. Libertarians are a strong part of the Republican coalition.
But a lot of them have left the Republican Party.
Well, that's true. And that's too bad. But Rand Paul, I want to say some good things about Rand Paul. I think he's one of the most serious candidates of the group. He talks about real issues. I think he's nailed a good one on the personal freedom and the, you know, his government spying on citizens issues. And so I would like to make sure that libertarians have a voice in our party, and I think Rand Paul represents them well.
He does. For some reason, he is just not impressing me in terms of the way that his race is unfolding, so I'm not sure that he's getting the donors really that he needs. Another one that's maybe not in the bottom three, but is not doing as well maybe as he would like, is Huckabee. Very gracious, I thought, last night. It certainly opened the debate with a lot of accord and civility, but he, again, is somebody else that just doesn't seem to be gaining traction.
I agree. I don't think that he is getting traction, but his voice is always well thought, and you know, it's good to have him in the primary, but I do not see him being competitive as we get down the stretch here.
So in your top three that you think are almost, we'll call them a lock, and as far as moving forward the next month or so, who would the top three be for you?
Just very surprised by Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, I mean, I was kind of not thinking him as a serious candidate until he's done so well in the polls. My gosh, he's got a quarter of the, you know, Republicans going to polling now. Now, question is, does he fade in the stretch? Does he kind of had his 15 minutes of fame and then moves out? Also, you know, there's a lot of compromise involved in governing. What makes me a little bit worried about the Donald is, you know, is he just going to fire everybody if he can't agree with them?
But so, that might be a good thing. given what we have, that might be good.
You'd be a very lonely leader if you fired everybody. The guy who's definitely going to be one of the top three is Jeb Bush. It's because Jeb, you know, it takes a lot of money to run for president. He's got a real fundraising advantage. He's really kind of the heir to the Mitt Romney wing of the party from last time, which probably was the H.W. Bush, wing before him. So I see Jeb Bush being one of the top three. So I would say Trump, Bush. And then a guy who's doing very well is Ted Cruz. Mm. You know? And he is phenomenal on the stump. And there is a you know, a part of the coalition that he gives a strong voice to. But I also, and I'm, since I'm picking four instead of three, I would just like to say I think Carly Farina has struck a very good chord with Republican women, and that Republican women and, you know, men see that she could be viable in a lot of ways. And she has said many good things. So I almost put her fourth on my list of three.
She has done well. And in fact, during the debate, Carla and my wife, we had very different reactions. I thought she did quite well, and Carla walked away disliking her even more than she did. And I was surprised. Maybe it's a gender thing. I don't know. I know that in my Twitter feed, there was a lot of people also, and all of them women, saying how much they disliked her. I would say certainly Trump would be in my top of the list there as far as continuing. And within that, I would say it's probably gets back to this notion that, okay, he may not be as conservative, but I get the sense that he will get something done. And I think that people are really responding to that. I would say Carson is one that is maybe on that cusp, maybe three or four, somewhere in there. I see him continuing on, and Cruz for sure. And I have to agree with you that Bush will probably continue on, although he's not my particular pick. But again, he's better than Hillary.
Carson is so well-spoken, and you know he just feels presidential in a lot of ways, that it is. I think that he might be a guy that could come on strong as we get down the stretch here. So I would definitely not count him out of the group. I think somebody who has made a shot and probably will retire from the race, Lindsey Graham. I don't see him getting a lot of support outside of the South. And the guy that is, I think, very interesting and would, you know, has a wonderful background is John Kasich. And John Kasich's governing skills, especially the work he did in the Congress, I think qualify him as a, you know, a great executive, and the fact he's governor of Ohio makes him very important in terms of the Electoral College. So Kasich is kind of a mystery that will be revealed as we get farther down the road here.
It will be interesting. You know, I mentioned that Bush, even though he's not my favorite, is certainly better than any of the Democrats. And speaking of which, let's get your thoughts on them. We've been teasing that long enough. I have a personal feeling that Hillary will be dropping out, and I
agree with you.
And the reason I say that is because it positions her on two levels. Number one, it positions her as the martyr, that vast right wing conspiracy, and plus she can then use that to raise all sorts of money for the Clinton Foundation, and that's really where her fallback is. And then on the other side of that, I do see Biden getting into the race. Simply because you've got Hillary, she's upsetting things, she can't get anything done, and you've got Bernie Sanders, and now it's perfect positioning for them to hand the reins to Biden as, ironically enough, the voice of reason. Go figure.
Mark, I agree. I think Hillary's issue is about trust, and that a lot of us don't trust her. We don't think she was straight with us on Benghazi, and that was a horrible embarrassment for our country. Tragic. And then the whole email thing, why have a separate set of servers so that you can have secret emails? I mean, and then not being forthright about the email controversy. So she does not pass a transparency test. So as a wounded candidate, establishment Democrats have got to be looking for a lifeboat.
Yeah.
And there's something comfortable and known about Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And let's face it, Joe Biden has been a very successful retail politician in an East Coast way. And by that, I mean there's hardly anybody in politics that works the crowd better than Joe Biden does. And so he will be a comfortable choice away from Hillary for a lot of the Democratic Party. I think more moderate, more mainstream Democrats are frightened as much as we are by Bernie Sanders and his
socialist absolutely.
Policy.
And, you know, we talked earlier about positioning, and I think that's why Biden may be the answer, is that they have positioned him well to come in and wear that new mantle. All right, we are up against the clock. Everyone stay with us. We'll be wrapping things up with Greg Leo talking about chances of Republicans here in Oregon. And welcome back. We're wrapping things up now with Greg Leo, longtime conservative and Republican. strategist. He's been around the Republican Party since the Reagan administration, and his thoughts are always very welcome, and as well as his insights. And I'd like to shift gears, though, talking about Oregon now. We've been talking on a national level. So in terms of the governor, what are things looking like here?
Well, you know, Keith Brown is a great opportunity for us. She certainly has a long record that could be part of a campaign. We've got Bud Pierce, who has announced and is traveling around the state campaigning. And I don't think I think we will see other candidates come forward. Everyone is kind of waiting to see what Alan Alley is going to do. You know, Dennis Richardson has chosen not to run this time, and Newt Bueller is not in the race either. So I expect that there are two or three other Republicans who are about ready to announce. I don't want to speculate about who they are, but it would seem to me that two or three Republicans in our primary would be healthy in terms of finding the Republican to run against Keith Brown, the presumptive nominee.
Certainly competition always makes you stronger. And so in terms of the U.S. Senate seat, we have one open this year, well, 2016, with Ron Wyden running for election. So do you have any insights in terms of who might be trying to run for him, running against him?
Yes, well, Mark Callahan, who ran against Jeff Merkley, has, you know, in the primary and was defeated by Monica Levy, has announced, and that's the only candidate I know of. It's a tough race because Ron Wyden is popular in Oregon. I have to say, he spent a lot of time getting out to see people. And so right now, as a senior senator, it is very hard to take an incumbent U.S. senator out unless there is a scandal or some other issue. I mean, typically that's what happens in those kinds of races. So I think we may see one or two other candidates come forward, but it looks pretty good for our senior senator, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately, I would have to agree with that. I don't see him being unseated, like you said, unless there's some sort of scandal that is out there, or, you know, who knows? There may be something.
To give Ron Wyden some credit, he really has worked hard at getting out to see people, and we've seen him at town hall meetings across Oregon where he actually does address issues and talk to people. So that's, you know, giving Ron his due. He is out there showing the flag.
Well, you know, and in comparison to Merkley, he is practically conservative.
Well, in a Washington, D.C. context,
I know. But, only there would he – only in Washington, D.C. would Oregon's Ron Wyden be considered conservative. I do want to ask you about Betsy Johnson. She is also considering making a run for governor, but not necessarily as a Democrat or a Republican. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, at this point in time, the deadline for re-registering was last week, and so it appears Betsy will not be running as an independent for the governorship. But, you know, I think Republicans might well think of sending Betsy a registration card and asking her to come over because, you know, she basically votes consistently with Republicans on most issues. She represents her rural constituency very well. She'd be a credible candidate.
I agree with you. She would be very credible. But you mentioned that there was a deadline there that she just missed. Is it possible to get her over to the Republicans?
You have to be registered with the party to run in the primary. And I can't remember. I think it's 120 days prior to the election. And that deadline was last week, I believe. So we've seen who is possibly running as an independent. Maybe Jim Thompson will be running for the Mike Nierman House seat as an independent, and we'll have a state treasurer candidate in Chris Telfer, who is running as an independent. Those are the only two Republicans I know of that re-registered as independents in order to run in this cycle.
But to be clear, Betsy cannot run as a Republican?
Yes, she can run as a Republican. She can always do a write-in campaign, but not in the primary.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
Betsy Johnson might, you know, she could run a writing campaign in the general election, but at this point in time, she could not become the Republican nominee.
Okay. All right. Well, Greg, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock, but your insights, always enjoy them. And this is going to be a fascinating election cycle.
Well, and everybody remember to register and vote, and please vote Republican.
All right. Thank you. And thank you for joining us today on the iSpire Radio Show. So glad you did that, and hope you enjoyed our little discussion and analysis of the Republicans' chances in the upcoming election. What do you think? I'd love to hear your thoughts on the candidates, and what are the best selling points of your favorite? Be sure to check our website, iSpyRadio.com, for a fun little video on today's show page. That's 538. A fun little video that you can share with all of your Republican friends, but especially your Democrat friends. You'll have to go check it out to see what I mean. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.